Reece Stanley.
Yeah, outstanding form. He's sort of that player that maybe people felt never the catapult to play to his best. He had a really good patch until he got injured last year. Where's he at, and feel like he can sustain that form?
Well, hopeful. Can't predict the future, but the signs are good. It was a really interesting contest at the time, but even in review between Stanley and Radigalia and Cox and Grundy, they're a formidable combination, and I would expect that those two would play very well this Thursday night. Our analysis was that we thought Grundy was on top early and Stanley was on top late. They almost evened each other up to an extent, but he's an important player for us. I don't think anyone should read too much into our list management decisions last year to bring in Darcy Ford as a 25-year-old, at least not in terms of any confidence or lack thereof in our big guys. But Zach Smith came back and played his first game back after a medial ligament injury on the weekend and played quite well. So, yeah, we're optimistic that that group of players are going to serve us well. We won't lay out our approach on Wednesday. My view, maybe a little simplistically, is that it's been overplayed to some extent. I watched the game at home, and the commentators certainly made a big deal of it, which tends to be spread far and wide. You know, when most people are watching the game on TV and they can't see what's happening off the ball, they've almost got to take the commentator's word for it. The important thing, I think, for the football community, and the AFL has done a good job of communicating this to us this week, is that everyone understands, and particularly our players understand, what you can and can't do. And they've been quite clear. I think there's been a little bit of a misunderstanding around the treatment Gawn got. He's knocked off the ball at one stage and got a free kick for it, and that's probably what should happen. It wasn't forceful enough to be a suspension, but it was a $2,000 fine. So I think the AFL are clearly saying you cannot do that. And so when you're one of the best players in the competition, you're going to get some extra attention from the opposition. So I don't think that Max is particularly different to Clayton Oliver or Jack Viney or Paddy Dangerfield or Joel Selwood. They will expect treatment every week. And I heard Max himself say that it wasn't unexpected. It's what happens. I think it's been focused on a little more this week than it has in previous games. But I don't think that really changes our approach that much.
Was your midfield set up last week what we can expect throughout the year, or specific to the matchup that presented you last week?
The honest answer is I don't know. Difficult to predict the form of our players, the development of some of our younger guys. We thought the early signs were good with Parfitt spending a little bit more time in there. Selwood a slightly different role, Ablett a slightly different role. You know, the continued evolution of Tim Kelly. And we have some young players on the fringes of our team. We played four debutants, but the next guys in line aren't exactly 200-game players. So if those players develop the way we're optimistic that they will, it will change. But there's rarely been a team that started round one with success and just kept the same formula all the way through the year. But I think the big picture issues and the profile players, I suspect who you're talking about, it'd be unlikely that we would revert back to something we've done in previous years. It's more likely a continued evolution, and who knows where that's going to end up.
And so with the list management view, that it had to change for you to move forward?
No, we didn't make any list management changes with our midfield group. In terms of people coming on and off the list.
Yeah, how you structure up and how you can get better.
I mean, we're always changing. All of us. We reserve our right to put some more experienced players back through the middle. I know there's a lot made of Ablett's change in role, but the game was on the line late last Friday night and he was in the centre bounce. We will do those sort of things at times. I think it's the wrong language to say it had to change, and I think it's the wrong. I think it's a poor analysis, at least compared to the analysis we've done, to pin any lack of success we had last year on some of our more experienced midfielders.
I wasn't doing that. I was just wondering whether for the you guys to sort of get into contention again when you obviously made a few changes in round one to, in personnel and where some of your guns play. There's more along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, I'll repeat in part what I said. I think it's part of the natural evolution. I said post-game that if Brandon Parfitt didn't have a couple of serious injuries in his first couple of years, we would have played him in the midfield in front of other guys well and truly before now. We are still really confident in our experienced players, so we've been trying for a long period of time to build a deeper midfield, and that's going to be a combination, we think, of 200-plus gamers and some first gamers like Charlie Constable. So even with all the inside information that we have, I can't give you a really clear picture of where that's going to be in 5 or 6 weeks' time.
I know it's only Wednesday, but the four debutants from last week, you were in a position, so are they going to be playing the game this week?
They didn't do anything in terms of their performance or their preparation this week in the way they pulled up from the game to suggest that they've done themselves any harm at the selection table. It's way too early. Don't want to give those guys false hope. It's one of the reasons I'm a bit cautious early in the week, because I think it is a poor move to give players hope that they're in the team and then have to give them the bad news. But I can't be much more optimistic with their chances than that.
Yeah. You spoke before about some of the guys who are sort of on the fringe and were in the team from last week. One of those would be Quinton Knuckle. What are you, I guess, looking to see from him? What does he need to do to push for selection?
These questions are always difficult to answer. We're not in the business. And I'll give you an example or a hypothetical of a player that might leave our club. We're not in the business of giving them a kick on the way out, and I think highlighting some of the deficiencies they might have publicly is not the right thing to do or the fair thing to do. So Quinton's, like every player on our list, he has some areas of his game that he's working on, but I don't really want to articulate them to the whole world. I don't think that's fair on him. But I will talk about the things that we love about his game. He's a developing, young, contested player who we're really confident can evolve into an inside midfielder who can also play forward. And he's well and truly just on the fringe. He played well at VFL level as well. But again, if you'd indulge me for a bit, and this is a risk because I might leave some out, he's one of a group including Zach Guthrie, Jermaine Jones, Parsons, Cunico, Wiley Buzzer, Ryan Abbott, who we think are ready to come in and do the job for us if we need them. It just didn't quite go their way week one. There's every chance it will week two, three, four. Did I miss anyone, Simon? Sam Simpson.
Can Guthrie play this week?
We're hopeful. Yeah. Can't really elaborate too much, given we trained today. So unfortunately, you're not invited to see the whole thing, so you have to rely on what I'm saying. I'm pretty confident he'll go well today, which leaves him in pretty good shape. But you know we play the long game with these as well. So for those that don't know, he was unavailable for selection last week with a calf issue that we were confident was really minor. But with these sort of calves, we've said before, he'll be right. He only just missed, so he'll be right the next week. And then they miss again, and it looks as if we were being evasive. The honest answer is we're just not quite sure.
How is Zach Tui tracking?
A little bit longer than previously thought in terms of his return, but in the first month to 6 weeks, we think now that the harder part to answer is how that translates into him coming to the AFL team. But we're pretty confident he'll be healthy and available to play, but he's missed a bit of training as well, so all those things have got to go into the mix.
What was your impression of your kind of new look forward line and why they worked with each other on Friday?
It was a good start. We saw some of the things that we've talked about trying to improve, but we still are realistic that we have a group of guys that haven't played together much. So even Radigalia in that mix, he's played 8 or 9 games in his life. So he was part of that group early in the season last year, but if you take him out of that group, Tom Hawkins is really the only one that's played there for any period of time. So we thought the signs were good, but we're not getting ahead of ourselves.
How much of a test is it for this young midfield? Collingwood, who everyone says is the best midfield now, Melbourne, who everyone says is the best midfield. I mean, it's an amazing test in the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, you only talk about Collingwood being the best midfield when you're forgetting about Melbourne's midfield and vice versa. You know, and there are others as well. We can see the logic in most people's thinking that they're one of the premiership favourites. I think that just stands to reason. And if one game last week has changed that, then that's great news for the comp, because West Coast are in trouble and Essendon are in trouble, and there's eight teams that aren't going as well as we thought. I just don't think that's right. I think they're a pretty good team. No, they're a very, very good team and one of the logical premiership favourites.
Just Joel Selwood last year, we're trying to think of that final and the way Cheddar just split him down the middle fairly. I mean, obviously the physicality of the game or you roughing up people, but I mean, Joel's got a pretty long memory. I mean, will there be anything from that final?
Oh, there'll be memories from the final. I doubt there'll be isolated physical incidents. The game's moved a long, long way from players going in thinking, I've got one to square up. It's so hard to get that opportunity for a start within the rules. But I think everyone knows Joel Selwood well enough that if the opportunity arises for him to be really physical at the contest, he's going to take it. But not because he's... I don't even remember the incident that well that you're talking about. What I remember is them being a really, really hard and physical midfield group. That's the way we expect them to play this week. So it'll be a big challenge for our boys.
How does the build-up to the first home game of the season for you guys feel different to any other game?
We love playing at home. We are on track for a record membership this year. We're excited to get a really vocal home crowd again this week. And the ground is a little... There's no such thing as a little unique. It is unique in AFL circles, so we think we play the ground pretty well. We think we play even better. It gives us that little extra lift. It's an intangible, but we get a little bit of an extra lift when our home crowd's really up and about. And I think for a couple of years now, we've got a big group of supporters that must be excited to come to the footy at home, but also a bit nervous because the results are much, much harder to predict than they were 5 or 6 or 10 years ago.
Just on the ground, is it a narrower ground?
Don't tell everyone.
Is it just with the new rules as well, though, the 666, does that make it easier to defend the clearances just because you haven't got as much room to cover in terms of the width of the ground inside 50? Does that make
sense? I understand where you're coming from. I think we're all trying to work it out. Mm. We haven't got a really strong view yet because, again, forecasting, what we need to forecast a little bit in our jobs, but being hard and fast on our predictions is really dangerous. It's more important for us that we just stay agile and keep our eyes on what's happening around the competition, not just in our game, but things that we need to be aware of. And we haven't come to any strong conclusions just yet. So, again, I mean, I've been a mild advocate, I would describe it, for the new rules, in part because I just think it creates a bit of suspense. No one's really sure what's going to happen, even the people that do it for a living. So that must be good for the supporters.
Are you an advocate for no runners?
No, as a coach. So there's two clear parts to it for me, and hopefully this is the last time I talk about it for the year. As a coach, I want complete control. If I were an AFL administrator, I wouldn't give it to me.
Just on Zach Tui, is he a setback or has it been a recovery slower than...
Sorry, I missed him.
Zach Tui.
Yeah. My setback, I hope that's not the headline because I don't think that's accurate. So what we do is, or what we're given from our medical staff is a really broad return to play schedule that's subject to change almost on a daily basis. So when that stretches out a little bit, we're not surprised by it. But there hasn't been an incident. It's just a case of he progresses his rehab when his knee lets him, and just hasn't let him do it as quickly as we would have liked. But I think it became a bit more unrealistic for us because Zach's played a million games in a row and was determined to get up for round one. As it turns out, that was a really, really ambitious goal, and we just weren't prepared to push the rehab just so we could start the season. We wanted to finish the last 20 games in really good shape.
Just on Joel, only 6 centre bounces. I mean, some captains would be angry at that. Just take us through how magnanimous he was and selfless to realise that's the best thing for the team, at least for round one.
And that's the key point, at least for round one. He is integral to our planning as a captain and the type of person he is, being so team first. And clearly we all have egos, and he has a strong desire to impact the games as much as he possibly can. But it's become clearer to us that we don't, and this goes for Dangerfield, Nablett and whoever else you want to mention, we don't think that we need to have them front and centre at every single contest to be competitive. So if there's a spectrum between cracking it and being absolutely committed to it, he's as far up that end as you could possibly get.
Chris, as long as you didn't see the frame
for this one. I should clarify that, because there's not always vision here. He's as far up the really committed to that. Yes, please. Is he in the frame? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, sorry, when I spoke about the players on the edge, I was referring more to the inexperienced players. He played really well at VFL level, and there's a few factors that go into the decision-making with selection, but especially with key position players where the mix of your team is really important. And there's a few others, you know, Harry Taylor, Jake Collegeasney, there's a few guys that will be in that position a little bit this year. What we're trying to, the approach we're trying to take with our defensive group is that we have get a group of guys who are ready to play in any particular week, and we're going to go with a combination of that. So we highly expect Lockie to play a lot of AFL footy this year, and he played well enough last week to show us that, you know, he's ready if we pick him. And if we don't, I reckon he'd be just as good a chance to play the following week.
Just on Harry Taylor, not to phone, there's a question between those two, but just generally, big mark against Cox late in the game, just looked in great touch up. Probably a few people maybe wrote him off unfairly last year.
I think if you're over 30, and he'd only be just, is he 30, roughly? That then every time you play poorly, it's the beginning of the end. If you're 20, you know, you just had a bad day. Harry, there was, but I think it is fair to say, if the position we're in, if some of our older players taper off, we think we've got players to come in and take their spots. Whether they've been 15-year stalwarts for the footy club, you know, Harry might not quite have played that long, but he's just has been a champion of this footy club on and off the field. But he knows, and he knew through the pre-season, that if it made more sense to us short and long-term to play a 20-year-old, that's what we were going to do. So I don't think he needed any extra motivation, but he had a great preparation. And in terms of the pros out there in the AFL world, he would be right up at the top of that list.